come down to more mundane things. Tough. All right, we're holding on page 54. Okay.
This is more mundane. I don't think so.
Well, yeah, you're right. I guess prayer is not more mundane. Tov. However, that's what we're up to. On page 54, in the middle of the first of the three commonalities that the covenantal community of prayer and prophecy have in common, and we spent a lot of time already discussing this idea, that prayer, all the external technicalities of prayer are just that. They're the crystallized, standardized external technicalities, but they're not the mahus, the essence of what prayer is.
54? No, it's 56 in the middle of the page.
The essence of what...
You have that. No, I have this one.
Okay. Nine pages up, nine lines up, 56.
You don't need to get the page. Got it. Thank you.
You're
the essence of what prayer is the standing before God, is the dialogue with God, and that's what makes it like prophecy. And we spent 2 weeks discussing that the Rav says that even though the total faith commitment necessitates bringing the subjective into the objective, saying the words, and we spent a lot of time discussing, because number one, that makes the commitment viable. It makes the possibility of having the organized religion that we all dread so much, makes the possibility of a religion being a bar kayoma, being able to be continued. And last week at the end of the class, we also learned, according to Chassidus, that it's the objective, technical, physical, worldly, crystallized rites that actually bring the essence of Hashem, Ein Sof. But the Rav then goes back and says, however, this is what we're up to, however, no matter how important this tendency in the part of faith commitment is, meaning the tendency to standardize, and it is of enormous significance in the halacha, which constantly demands for man that he translate his inner life into external facticity, as he explained in halachic man at length. So on that side of the coin, we spent a lot of time. But now we continue that it remains unalterably true, and these next lines I have underlined, the very essence of prayer is the covenantal experience of being together with and talking to God. This is the wording that only Rav Soloveitchik knew how to formulate. The very essence of prayer is the covenantal experience of being together with and talking to God. And that the concrete performance, such as the recitation of texts, represents the technique of implementation of prayer and not prayer itself. So that's what the Rav says, and I would, you know, when I was in Isabella Friedman, they have up on the walls, they have quotes from Heschel about what prayer is. Heschel also has beautiful prayers, quotes about prayer. So I would say, if you know, in all of our shuls and homes in Teaneck, they should have up on the wall these quotes from the Rav. This is one of them. This is one you can write in your sitter and meditate on. The very essence of prayer is the covenantal experience of being together with and talking to God, and the concrete performance, such as the recitation of texts, represent the technique of implementation of prayer and not prayer itself. Now we're going to go to the footnote, which is at the end of the chapter. You see over here it says footnote 1. But before we see the footnote, let me just tell you what the Rav is essentially going to talk about. If we're saying that the very essence of prayer is the covenantal experience of being together with God, and that the concrete recitation of text is only the technique of prayer, how does that fit in with what we usually look at as the idea of kavana? Kavana. We always speak about kavana, that whenever you daven, when you do a mitzvah, even when you learn Torah, you're supposed to have kavana. And kavana we always translate as the inner life, the inner world, our mind, right? Not to do with your lips, not to do with your hands. That's what kavana is. But according to what the Rav just said now, that the very essence of prayer is the being together and talking to God, and the concrete recitation of texts is only the technique of prayer, so how does that fit in what you understand of kavana?
Technique.
What?
It's technique. I mean, take the word kavana, lechavein.
Yeah.
So that is just the technique by which you can speak to God.
But what is...
I'm just positing it.
Kavana is just being together with God.
Seemingly the being together with God is the kavana, right?
This kavana like that and this kavana tamilim, whatever.
So that's what the Rav is going to say in the footnote. But I want to... That's exactly what the Rav is going to bring in the footnote. But what I want to point out, what's difficult and what the Rav said, the reason that he needs a footnote over here is that before you already know what the Rav is aiming towards in the footnote. But before you see the footnote, well, the difficulty is that seemingly what people usually call kavana, which is that knowing you're standing before God, the essence of prayer, the covenantal experience, people usually call that as kavana. The Rav just defined that not as kavana. He defined that as that's what prayer is. Again, what are the words? The very essence of prayer is the covenantal experience of being together with and talking to God. And the talk and the concrete performance of the recitation of the text is only a technique of prayer. So here we see the Rav is saying that the kavana of prayer is completely different than all other commandments. Because all other commandments, when you pick up a lulav, what's the actual mitzvah? Picking up the lulav. Whether you have any kavana or not, you've done the mitzvah. You could be thinking about nothing in the world. You've done the mitzvah. Kavana is the kavana, the mental work that you have. When it comes to prayer, however, the knowledge, the awareness and consciousness of being before God is not kavana. It's the very essence of prayer.
Is this more than the classical brisket, keel, and masa of the mitzvah? The masa is the technique and the keel is the essence.
It's not here, the lumdus here is in maisa and keel. Here the lumdus is two dinim and kavana. That's what the Reb Chaim is going to say. Different type of lumdus. There are two dinim in what kavana is, and the kavana that you're standing before God is the maisa. Let's see the footnote. Turn to the end of the chapter. Let's see the footnote inside. Footnote 1. It's all the way at the end of the chapter. What? No. By us, it's on page 71. Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
So all the way at the end of the chapter. The end of chapter 7.
74.
Huh? 74. Yes, the popular. Yep.
Yeah, so
got it?
Footnote as opposed to asterisk.
Right, that's why there's a number 1 as opposed to the asterisk. It's not a bottom of the page. What do you call it? Bottom of the page note. It's not a footnote, it's an end note. Right, okay. Says the Rav. So here the Rav is going to explain his contention that the act of prayer is only in the mind. Essentially, that's what the Rav is saying. The act of prayer is in the mind. The lips is only the technique. The actual maisa, the act of prayer is only what's happening in the mind. And you understand that the Rav is not referring to anything mystical, although those are all deeper types of kavana, but the basic act of prayer is that awareness.
But
let's see the footnote.
That's why those work also. That's why meditation or something other than the words that we have been brought up to say work as well, if you can reach that kavana.
Well, again, but here what we're saying is like this. Meditation that necessitates deep meditation, stopping everything, being in a complete mental state, and these different levels. That, as we learned last week, is not possible in a mincha on Wall Street when you have to sell stocks. That fluctuates, mm-hmm. Right? Like we learn halachic man. But what the Rav is saying now is that a general awareness of being in the presence of God, that, I don't know if you want, it depends if you want to call it a meditation. It's not even a meditation. It's just a simple awareness and a consciousness. That is not only possible, but obligatory 3 times a day, no matter what. Because without that, you just didn't daven. Let's see the footnote. The popular biblical, yeah?
I understand that is what the Rav is saying, but halachically.
That's what I was thinking.
We say that even if you don't have kavana,
Yotze.
You don't go back.
So let's learn. Let's see the footnote. Let's see the Reb Chaim.
The first bracha.
Right. The Mishnah Berurah says even if you don't have it in the first 3 brachas.
So you want to skip to the end? If you want to skip to the end,
I don't want to skip to the end.
So we'll get there. But you're right. The bottom line is.
But you really should. Did we have this discussion? Did we have this here that the Gemara basically says?
Let's learn inside.
The truth is, you really should go back.
I know.
Let's learn inside.
Right, because we're going to miss the kavana the second time.
That's the Magen Avraham and the Mishnah Berurah, what they talk us say. Right. And a Hanami. That is the bottom line. Right. Let's start with the end. The bottom line is you don't have to go back. That's what we say. That's otherwise most of us would be dead fish out of the water. Right? So, of course, at the end of the day, Lamaisa, we don't have to go back. But that doesn't change the fact that that's what prayer is. And the only reason we don't go back, like you said, is like the Mishnah Berurah brings from the Magen Avraham, is that Lamaisa, chances are you won't have Kavanah a second time. But that, right, that's, it's just something we...
Depressing rationale, right?
Yeah.
realistic.
But Lamaisa, it doesn't change the fact that we should try to pray properly. Let's see inside. Look, the popular biblical term tefillah and the esoteric halachic term avodah shebelev refer to an inner activity, to a state of mind. So the Rav right away says that it's connoted in the words. Forget about anything deeper than the fact that that's what the words mean. The popular biblical term tefillah, that's from the Bible, right? And the esoteric halachic term avodah shebelev, which is from the sages, refer to an inner activity, to a state of mind. By the way, what the Rav doesn't say it over here, but the question that really you should ask, again, if we speak about not the what the Rav is speaking about, the, you know, standardizing, crystallizing, but if a person is able to come to that state of mind, why does one have to move the lips? What's the reason b'chlal one needs to move the lips? The question
is
the other way.
That's the argument we had last week.
So last week we spoke about having the standardized text, and you're right. But I'm saying the point is that even if, let's say, back in the good old days, when they were able to come to these meditative subjective states completely, they would still move their lips.
How far back are you talking?
As far back as you want.
Go back to Cham.
No.
Sure. It says that they vayetzi yichla suach basada. They were always chana. They were, their lips were moving. We learn it out from chana.
If you take it literally, how can you take? You can take some stuff literally, but a lot, almost all of this is cannot be taken literally.
But it says that chana was moving her lips, right?
Suach basada. We're talking about Yitzchak. Forget about chana for now.
Okay.
That was the paradigm of modern day tefillah. But and that was brought to teach us a different case. Chana's tefillah was to teach us that Eli HaKohen did something terribly incorrect. Not that she was davening, but that Eli...
The whole Gemara learns out from her.
I understand.
And she was biblical Judaism.
That's rabbinical Judaism.
Chana?
Yes, because you only know about it through the rabbinical Judaism.
What do you mean? It says in the book of Shmuel, it says that our lips
were moving. We're only learning it through... But that's a different... let's go back to... We're talking about Lasuach Besada.
No.
We're not taking that literally. How else do we learn it that it's tefillah?
Right, the word that's being used for tefillah is sicha, which means speech.
And we know for sure are you saying that he actually said the Amida?
No, I didn't say about Amida, but he said words.
Right.
I'm not saying it's muchach. Let's not. It's the it could be you could argue, and it was only Chana. I don't want to get into it. The point I'm just saying is b'chlal. What's the reason of moving lips? Is there a reason other than standardized texts? So I just wanted to say a point that the Alter Rebbe in Tanya chapter 38 in Tanya he says. The inyan of moving the lips is to draw down that godly light on the physical body also. In other words, it's very interesting like this. We know that the world is split into three pillars. Torah, prayer, and mitzvahs, right? Torah, tefillah, and gemil chasadim, mitzvahs ma'isiyas. We know that there are three garments of the soul, thought, speech, and action. How do you pair them together? Thought, speech, action, and the three pillars upon the world rest, Torah, tefillah, and mitzvahs, ma'isis. How would you pair them together? So seemingly most people would say that Torah is thought, tefillah is speech, and mitzvahs are ma'isa, right, our act. But in Hasidic philosophy, in Chabad, that it never says, it always says the opposite. It says tefillah is thought, Torah is speech, and mitzvahs are ma'isa. Why? Because how do you do the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? You have to move your lips, right? It says, v'dibarta bum. We learn it out, the mitzvah of learning Torah, as we say in the Shema, v'dibarta bum. V'gisa b'yom v'lai, v'dibarta bum means you have to actually say the words. And the halacha is, it's a whole shot if you have to say birch satorah, if you just think Torah. According to most achrayim, you don't have to say birch satorah, if you just think Torah, because you're not doing the mitzvah of learning. You have to actually say it with your lips. Tefillah and understanding is just a condition to be able to, in order for your lip, if, by the way, Torah shebichsav, when it comes to Tanakh, if you read the words and you don't have any understanding, you're Yotze, you get the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Which, by the way, it's important to keep in mind, especially these parshas that we're now about the Mishkan. Mm-hmm. Were you ready to shoot yourself, like in parshas of Ve'akha Pekudei? you know, when with these psukim go on and on and on and on and on. So you have to know that it's actually brought that in the Zohar that the holiest Torah learning we do the whole week is by Kriyas HaTorah. That's Torah learning. We don't usually look at it like that, but it's the highest level of Torah learning the whole week, because Shomei Ka'ona, when he's learning, it's as if you're reading it also by listening. And by Torah Shebichsav, by the written, by the Tanakh, you don't have to understand in order to get the mitzvah of learning Torah. Which is why even if an Amaretz gets an Aliyah, he makes Birchas HaTorah. An Amaretz, somebody that doesn't know anything. Somebody, you just, a Jew off the street, you give him an Aliyah, he makes Birchas HaTorah. Why? Because he does the mitzvah Talmud Torah by listening. Right? Tefillah is the opposite. Tefillah, the main part of the mitzvah is thought. So why do you have to move your lips? The answer is to bring it down onto your body also. But the idea is the main focus of tefillah is thought. We mamas don't look at it like that, but that's the truth.
Well, that's all be the altar rebbe, but there must be another explanation as well.
There's always another explanation.
That's why the grah says that you have to make the bracha for thought. Didn't you hold that way?
Yeah, the grah does hold that.
The other way.
I agree. You're right. Okay, John, the one say I shouldn't slip it by. The grah doesn't agree with the altar rebbe, but the grah says you have to make birchtar on thought also. Fine? Okay. Yes. 100%. But the bottom line is, everyone would agree that that doesn't change the fact that prayer, in essence, is an act of thought. That's what the Rav is going to say. And the speech is very secondary. Let's see inside.
There's also the textbook of the Chinuch, Mitach HaPula and Shach HaLavot, that through the act of saying words, he doesn't say this by tefillah.
Right.
That might help with the development or the internalization of the thought.
So that's interesting. The chinuch, when he says that achrei pulas timshach salavavus, that we're drawn after the way we act, which I've heard people phrase as fake it till you make it, or Pavlov would say conditioning.
That's
right?
Behaviorism.
That's behavioral conditioning. So it's interesting that you want to put that on tefillah. It might be connected to that. I'm not saying, but what's interesting is that comparing that to what people say, that kol me'or kavana. I don't remember where that phrase is originally from. I know it's brought in a lot of places, but I don't know if it's a chazal or the original sources later, but there is a phraseology, kol me'or kavana. The voice arouses kavana. By saying it, you arouse your kavana. So that might be connected to it. I never thought about that, but that very well might be connected with what the chinuch is saying, behavioral conditioning.
I mean, just technically, then why do we daven belachash?
Who's we? Oh, you mean Shmon Esrei?
Yeah.
Oh, well, first of all, that's why Psukei Dezimra and many of the other prayers, one's supposed to pray loudly.
Yeah, but that's not davening.
Well, it's not davening. It might not be davening, but it's not davening. It's not the ultimate davening. The reason we play belachash is because the kavan of Shmona Esrei, again, I could only give you the answer the way the Zohar explains. I'm sure there are answers in Nigla, but in the Zohar, Kabbalistically, because at that point of Shmona Esrei, we're enveloped within God. To the point that even, you know, it's interesting, halachically, you're supposed to hear your own voice by Shmona Esrei, right?
Mm-hmm.
According to Kabbalah, you're not supposed to. According to the Zohar, you're not even supposed to hear your own voice. In a lot of Chassidim, most of Munkach Chabad, you're not supposed to hear your own voice at all. Not like the Shulchan Aruch. Because you're supposed to be so nullified within God that you're not supposed to be your own entity. It's the secret of the Zohar connects it to the fact that the Kala is not heard under the Chuppah. In order to become unified, the Kala loses herself, Kilu, she becomes absorbed in the Chasan, which is why when Mashiach comes, it actually says, Kol Chasan, Kol Kala, when Mashiach comes, the Kala will be heard. And so there's a tradition, the in Chassidus, that when Mashiach comes, we will daven out loud, because then we won't have to lose ourselves to be unified with God. But now we have to lose ourselves within God, and that's why we don't hear our own voice. That's the Kabbalistic answer. Anyway, let's see inside.
But that's in order, the ones who say you have to hear yourself, make it that's the dialogue, that you have to have a dialogue that you're speaking to God. The ones who say that it's balachash, that's the mystical communion, that's
right.
The mystical union that
interesting.
God comes.
Very interesting. Beautiful. So you're saying that a more philosophical explanation is that since there's an encounter and a confrontation and a dialogue, so there is a place of you and God having a discussion. Mashenkin, according to the Kabbalistic idea of complete communion and unio mystica, so there one has no voice at all. Beautiful. I never thought of it like that. Right. Beautiful. That fits very nicely. Get everyone hear what he's saying? It's beautiful. That the philosophical, the nigla, so to speak, explanation is that it's a dialogue, like the Rav is saying. So even though one has that kavana, one is in God's presence, but one doesn't lose self. One is having a dialogue. But according to the mystical explanation that one's actually unified within and absorbed within God, then there's no place for one having a voice.
So in that respect, the Rav is agreeing with Buber.
Well, he is, 100%. We've spoken about that many times. The Rav is completely philosophical over here.
You shouldn't need to be speaking to God. He should be able to read what you're thinking. All-powerful, sure. Right? I mean, it should be all the kavana. It should be all the your thoughts. You shouldn't need your lips.
So on a philosophical level...
But for us to be able to daven, we're believing that God is different than us. He's separate from us. Mm-hmm. That God is not us.
No, well, that's completely the opposite of what...
No, but that's the philosophical explanation, not the Kabbalistic explanation. In a philosophical way of looking at things, we and God are the other, and we're having a dialogue. In a mystical, we're completely unified within him.
Right. Right, Spinoza and the philosophers.
Say that. Yep.
No, he was a chassid.
Spinoza was a chassid. He didn't have, the Rav Kook says he didn't know how to explain chassidus properly, but he, for sure. Let's see further. Neither Purim is when we're openly Spinozists, when we're openly pantheists, right? Purim is when there's no differentiation between, there's no duality, there's no good and evil, there's just the one. That's Purim. Right. That's the ultimate being drunk. That's the simcha of Purim.
We should be drunk on wine, not on liquor.
Well, it depends if you how machmir you want to be.
Rashi says yain.
Rashi says wine, but the chassidim weren't makbid on that, Rashi.
they use the liquor to help the wine take effect, I guess.
Let's see further. So says there of the pa... Huh? What?
It's like all the time. Meaning they don't make an exception for Purim.
I mean, the Rebbe drank out mashka. He drank whiskey, vodka and Purim also. Yeah. If wine does the job, vakasha, but some people, wine ain't going to do it. The popular biblical term tefila, prayer, and the esoteric halachic term service of the heart refer to an inner activity, to a state of mind. Kavana related to prayer is unlike... Now here, listen, this is what we said, but here it's written. Kavana related to prayer is unlike the kavana concerning other mitzvahs. Because it's not an extraneous addendum, but the very core of prayer. By other mitzvahs, kavana is an extraneous addendum. It's an added element. Picking up a lulav or eating matzah, having the kavana, is an added element. But prayer, it's the very core of prayer. The whole halachic controversy about kavana vis-a-vis other mitzvahs has no relevance to prayer. What's he referring to? Huh?
That's great.
The what? What's that?
Mitzvah
Shrichas Kavana. That's right, exactly. The Rav is saying the whole machlekes of Mitzvah Shrichas Kavana, which is, we have in the Mishnah about which mitzvahs. No, where do we have the whole Shah Mitzvah Shrichas Kavana? By Shofar, by Shema, right? By Shema and Brachas, whether you're reading it. Interesting. So matzah is one of the places that even if you hold mitzvahs need kavana, you're yotze even without the kavana, only because shekein nena. When it comes to eating, since you ate it, you had hana, you don't have to have kavana. But that's ready into pilpulim.
But making the matzah? Doesn't the matzah, when you're making...
That's right, making the matzah has to be l'shei matzah's mitzvah, right?
And
what else? Tzitzis. Making the tzitzis. But what in other mishnayos we have about the lute, we have about the shofar. If you hear a shofar, you're going by the shul.
Like this, by prayer, like this, what he's going to talk about, needs kavana, because otherwise it's not prayer. So too, if you don't make the shame of the tzitzis, it's not tzitzis, it's just strings.
By the way, this comes up, it's some interesting, if we're already getting into a little halachic discussion, there's a famous question the Alter Rebbe brings, that when it comes to derabanan, everyone agrees mitzvahs don't need kavana. Everyone agrees. Right? It's only by derabanan. Everyone agrees you don't need kavana by derabanan. Now, Sfiras HaOmer is this bizman hazeh, is a pashta, seemingly it's a derabanan. Right? Now, every time in shul, it's the funniest thing, one of my rabbeim, Reb Simcha Rabinovich, who wrote the Piskei Tshuvas, he says it always bothered him, that like even people that talk the whole time by davening, right? When the chazan starts saying the Omer, when he counts the Omer, shh, right? Shh. And the chazan counts the Omer, seemingly, Anyone that didn't have a kavana not to be yotze, like have an actual act of kavana, you are yotze. It's mamash mekone. You've heard the reading of the Omer. And those, if you didn't think, I don't want to be yotze, l'chor you're yotze. That's a big shaila. So there's a churma, one should try to have kavana. I don't want to either talk or I don't want to be yotze with the chazan, right? So it's an interesting thing. And also, by the way, the munkach and mechzah is an interesting shaila.
It says by the brach of halal.
Oh, exactly. Because the shaila is, what do you do if you say Tehillim on Chanukah, right? And you say Tehillim and you say halal, l'chor you did the mitzvah already. So that you, if you want to be real frum, you have to have kavana. You don't want to be yotze, right? So this is if you'd like to be a real frum person, this is Omer. Have in mind when the chazan says the Omer say, have in mind I don't want to be yotze with him, right? Let's see further. So but the Rav says that whole shaila about mitzvah shichas kavana or not has no relevance to prayer. There is not a single opinion that the latter, that kavana can be divorced from that the prayer can be divorced from kavana. Moreover, no. So first he says that everyone that whole shaila doesn't apply to prayer. Moreover, this not only that prayer has to have kavana, but the substance of the kavana, as far as prayer is concerned, differs fundamentally from that which some require during the performance of other mitzvahs. Not only does prayer have to have kavana, and there's no relevance to that whole shaila, what the kavana is also different than all other mitzvahs. Why? Because what's prayer? While the former denotes a state of mind, prayer's kavana is a state of mind. You know what a state of mind means? Being in, we call it in today's parlance, being in the zone. Right? It's getting into a zone. An all-embracing awareness of standing before the Almighty. Masha'enken mitzvahs, what's kavana by mitzvahs? You don't have to be in a state of mind. The latter only manifests only in the normative intention on the part of the mitzvah doer to act in accordance with the will of God. Right? By kavana, when they bake matzahs, you have these old Russian women. Well, when out today they already have, you know, frum guys and everything, but in the old days, there were the old Russian women. They still have the old Russian... Yeah, they still have the old Russian women with the gold teeth.
Yes.
Right? And so you have the guy... And you have the guy screaming, everyone together, especially if people come to watch, L'shei Matzah Smitzvah, right? And I remember one time, this interesting thing, there's a junior shalim, Chaim Shalom Deitch, he's a Rosh Kol and Tzemach Tzedek. So he said he was one time in a matzah bakery, and the guy was, like you said, whipping him, and he kept saying over and over, L'shei Matzah Smitzvah. And he heard in Hebrew someone say, like, quietly, L'shei Matzah Smitzvah, and he would say, Takesef. I want the money, but it's the shame that. But like he got mamash scared because the maisa. That means he's saying that he's admitting that the whole time he didn't have kavana for the shame matzah mitzvah. He wanted money, and l'chayra those Russian women also they might be saying l'shame matzah mitzvah, but they ain't doing it because they want to worship the Lord. They want money. So as a whole shala. So how does that fit? And the answer is what the Rav is saying here. To have in mind L'shei Matzah Smitzah doesn't mean you have to be in ecstatic adoration of God that I want to do this only for L'shei Matzah Smitzah. It's not a state of mind. You have to have in mind, why am I doing this to make mitzvah matzah? I'm doing it for money also. But when it comes to that type of kavana, they're not a contradiction, you understand? When it comes to saying, I'm making mitzvah matzahs and I want money, that's not a contradiction. But prayer, it is a contradiction.
Prayer is kavana.
Prayer, the whole mahus, its essence is kavana. And over there, and the kavana is not just, you can't just have a mincha, I want to be yotze mincha, even though very often we do, but that could work for matzahs and a lulav. When it comes to prayer, the kavana is not, I want to be yotze. Prayer is, as the Rav says, a state of mind, an all-embracing awareness of standing before the Almighty.
So that's the explanation, so I guess that's the explanation of the phrase Dalef Neim Miata Omed.
Yeah. For sure.
Das.
Yeah. 100%. Dalef Neim Miata Omed is prayer.
Yeah.
Is prayer. Yeah. Dalef Neim Miata Omed is prayer. 100%.
Is that the kavana that you have to have in the first bracha of Shmon Esrei? Is that the idea?
So wait, let's get to that. Let's see. Let's go. Kavana. Now, listen to this. So the Rav differentiated not only that prayer has to have kavana, everyone agrees, but he also differentiated between what the kavana is, correct? What's the difference? By mitzvahs, what's kavana?
Just keeping in mind.
I'm doing the will of God, I'm making mitzvah matzahs, and I want to make money. No problem. By prayer, what's the kavana? A state of mind, being in the zone. Now, says the Rav, Kavana in both cases, of course, expresses direction or aiming, like Jay said. That's what the word means. So in both cases, Kavana means aiming, right? L'chaven means to aim. However, in prayer one, what are you aiming in prayer? I love this. This I have underlined also. In prayer, one must direct his whole self towards God. What are you aiming? What's the kavanah of prayer? What are you aiming? Your whole being towards God. Whereas in the case of other mitzvahs, the directing is confined to a single act. Isn't that incredible? In other mitzvahs, it's like aiming an arrow, right? I'm sending this matzah to God, the lulav to God, the shofar to God, I'm aiming. In prayer, you know what you're aiming? All of you. You're pouring yourself out to God. Tak, if you speak about Chana, you remember the words that Chana said when she answered Eli HaKohen? The words she said is Ve'eshbeches nafshi lifnei Hashem. Such beautiful words. Ve'eshbeches nafshi lifnei Hashem. I'm pouring out my soul before God. It's a beautiful visualization. It's not just that you're pouring out your prayer, you're pouring out your heart. You're pouring out your whole being. That's what the Rav is saying. One must direct his whole self towards God.
Can you say that the difference between the two kavanas is that the kavanas by mitzvahs, masios, is external, while the kavana of tefillah has to be internal?
What do you mean external and internal? They're both in the mind, right?
No. The first kavana, when, let's say, by lulav and anything else, it's entirely external. It's something you do outside of the body.
The kavana is external?
Yeah, the act of kavana is saying, I'm netilas lulav.
No, but the kavana is the kavana has to be the we want it to be the mind.
The focus of the kavana.
Right. The action is external, and that's the
right.
Kavana.
Right. That's the kavana. In other words, I'm saying I'm not making my mind blank and picking up the lulav. I'm saying the act of my picking up this lulav is l'shem mitzvah's
right.
Lulav.
In other words, you're using your mind to direct an act.
Correct. While tefillah is entirely internal. You're focusing everything internal to make it a state of mind, to
right.
become one.
But I just add a little more. You're focusing your mind to give your whole self to God.
Correct, right.
You flip it around and you go external also. Not external, but you go...
No, you'd never go external.
No, but he's saying here...
But that's what I'm saying, is that God...
You direct your whole self toward God.
Right, that's not external.
That's not external.
That's not external.
That's internal.
That's very internal.
That's internal, but it's your...
You don't have to go out of you to find God. You go into you to find God. Avodah Shebelev, in the heart.
That's why I know the Ramak says that when by Hoshanis, that the Iker, when you point the Hoshanis up, down, back, forwards, the Iker is the last one when
bring
you
it to your heart.
When you bring it to your heart. Right. Everything is internal.
Right. Yep. Okay, now let's see. Now, I want to show you something. Now, the Rav says, Vida means see. Vidva, you see with the Rav? Vida? Vida, C, Brachas, Vina, Vida, Vici. Brachas 28b, Sanhedrin, Maimonides, Hilchas Tfila, right? Everyone with me? Mm-hmm. Now, then the Rav with the sentence that begins the fact. So I want you to skip to the very end of the footnote, and the last thing the Rav brings, where he says, see the very end of the footnote? A few lines after?
Yeah.
Just a few lines after. What does he bring from Chidush of Chaim Alevi? Mm-hmm. See it? Mm-hmm. You see it, Jay?
The last line, the last words. Five words.
Okay.
Yeah, you got it?
Right.
So, I don't want to read inside what the Rav says, because I want to read Chiddush Reb Chaim Alevi, and then we'll go back to see how the way the Rav says it, and then I'll tell you one of my biggest questions in my whole life that I've ever had. Okay?
Oh, so, ever had? Stakes are high now.
Yeah. Stakes are high, yeah. Okay, so the Rav, now essentially what really, as Adam has been saying, and Jonathan has been saying, and Reuben, everyone's been saying this, that really, this whole thing that the Rav is saying over here is based on his grandfather, Reb Chaim. And so that's what the Rav sources, and I have to tell you that it's not just in Brisk, the Lubavitch Rebbe would bring this Reb Chaim all the time. Tens and tens of times. Because this Reb Chaim, what we're learning over here, this idea of what prayer is the most basic definition of prayer. See, this is why it always bothers me that there are people that don't know this. There are people that don't, because this is not, this is a definition. What we're learning now is the definition of prayer. This state of mind and being the presence of God, that's not a kavana. That is the definition of prayer. And the source is this Reb Chaim. So the Reb Chaim is on the Rambam. So let's start. I'm sorry that it's a little sloppy. I'm not really good at making copies. I don't have a secretary yet. But take a look on the left side of the page, where this is all Hilchas Tefillah, first Perek Dalet, where it says Halacha Aleph. Everyone sees it?
Next yeah. Time. Safariyad.org.
Yeah.
It will change your life.
Why?
You'll see.
Yeah? Okay. I have what you call Oitzer Chochma, which sometimes could be easier, but it's...
Safariyad.org.
Yeah?
It's brand new, though. They just last week.
It helps you make source sheets.
Really?
Yeah, I did it.
Okay.
You mean they changed
it? They put the entire Gemara on last week.
Yeah.
Just last week.
The Quran. Yeah, free.
Good. Okay, let's learn. So on the left side of the page, you see Perek Revi. You have it on the top where it's circled. Chamisha Dvarim, yeah? Says the Rambam, chapter 4 in the Laws of Prayer. Chamisha Dvarim Akvim Es HaTfilah. Five things hold back prayer that you were not Yotze. Afa Pishi Gizman, even if the time for prayer comes, which of course is a source for the fact that Chasidim don't keep to the prayer, the time of prayer. People had tainas on, but here it's a Beferish Rambam. Rambam says five things are ma'akav tefillah, afa pishe gizman, even if the time has come and you don't have these five things, don't pray. What are they? Number one, taras yadayim. Your hands have to be pure. Number two, kisei erva. You have to be properly dressed. Number three, taras mokam tefillah. The place where you're standing has to be clean. Number four, dvar machiv samayse. Things that distract you. Number five, kavana salev. If these five things are missing, don't daven even if the time comes. Skip down to halacha tezvav, where it's circled. So the Rambam says, what's Kavanas Halev? Yeah, everyone has it? Kavanas Halev Ketzar. Says the Rambam, Kol Tfila She'ena BeKavana, Eina Tfila. Any prayer that one prays without Kavana is not a prayer. V'mispal B'lei Kavana, Choyz Mispal B'Kavana. If you prayed without Kavana, go daven again. If your mind is preoccupied and your heart is in other places, do not prayer until you settle your das, until you come to that zone. So that's the Rambam Halacha Dalet, that without prayer, it says, without kavana, you do not pray. Now, here comes the contradiction that Reb Chaim Brisker is going to resolve. Look at the next on the bottom, where it's circled, where it says, Perek Asiri. So according to this, at any point if you pray and you don't have kavana, you didn't pray. Says the Rambam Perek Asir Halacha Aleph, Mishis Palel V'Lei Kiven Es Liboy. Somebody that prayed and he didn't have kavana, Yachsov Yispal B'Kavana. Tough. So far, so good. So far, it fits with what he said in chapter 4. But then the Rambam says, here's the problem: Vim Kiven Es Liboy B'Brocha Rishona Shuvei Netzarech. If you add kavana, the first blessing of Shemona Esrei, you're fine. You only need the first bracha. So we have a contradiction. Chapter 4, he said, at any prayer without kavana, it's as if you didn't say the words. You didn't pray. In chapter 10, the Rambam says, only the first bracha. That's the issue Reb Chaim is dealing with. So look at the right side of the page from Reb Chaim. And this is the Reb Chaim that the Rav is bringing. So we're not going to read the first paragraph. The first paragraph is the contradiction that we just said. Reb Chaim brings the two Rambams. Then in chapter 4, he says that you need kavana, otherwise it's not prayer. Chapter 10, he says, only the first bracha. Says Reb Chaim, V'nira loymar, everyone have it? Detrei gavni kavanis ish b'tfila. There are two dinim. There are two types of kavana by prayer. Ha'achas kavana shel perish ha'dvarim. To know what the words mean. V'yaseida hu din kavana. And that is the same foundation, that's the sugi of kavana. Just like all of the mitzvahs, you have kavana. By lulav you have to have kavana. By shofar you have to have kavana. As an addendum, an added thing, knowing what the words mean is the added part of prayer. Actually understanding what the words mean, that's the kavanah of prayer. That's the added part of prayer. That's not the essence of prayer, knowing what the words mean.
So it's not the kavanah.
It is a kavanah. There are two types of kavanah, he's saying.
Okay, I got it.
There's one kavanah, like all of the mitzvahs, that there's an added element.
Okay.
That's knowing what the words mean. Uh-huh. And now he's going to say kavanah, which is not an added thing, which is what prayer is. Mm-hmm. Which makes the kavana prayer different than all of the mitzvahs. Mm-hmm. So prayer, tefillah has, like lulav and shofar, an added element. What's the added element? Knowing what the words mean. But then he says, Vashenis, but the other type of kavana is sheyechaven shu'oimed b'tfil lifnei Hashem. To have the kavana, to have the mind that you're standing before God.
So that's probably what he's talking about here.
Where?
With respect to the first bracha.
Is what?
You have to have the kavana that you're standing before God.
The opposite. He's saying the added element to know what the words mean, which is only an added element, that you only need in the first bracha. But if the act of prayer is the awareness of standing before God, you have to have that all the time. If you don't have that, then you haven't done the act of prayer. Look inside.
I'm thinking more on which is the more difficult thing for everybody to accomplish.
So,
certainly it's kavana, knowing that you're before God and all, not the words.
Maybe. Maybe it's more difficult, but what we've just learned, what the Rav said, right, is that
that's the essence of what prayer is.
It's not a kavana. Again, you might use the word kavana, but the word over here, having the awareness of standing before God, is not what we usually call kavana. It's the act of prayer.
Then that must be your question.
That's the answer.
Your essential question that you said.
We'll get to the Rav in a second. Wait. So far with what he's saying, that fits what the Rav says in the text.
Yeah.
That fits what the Rav says in the text. Let's see further. Kimavu b'dvarav perak dalet sham. And Reb Chaim brings that this idea that kavana in Perek Dalet, where he's saying without it you didn't pray, that's actually written in chapter 4. Vizel Shoina, he's quoting from the Rambam. Umaya kavana, and what is kavana? Says the Rambam, shiyafanes libim mikol machshavas, to make your mind free of all thoughts. Easier said than done. V'yir atzme kilo eimel lefnei hashchina, and to see oneself you're standing before the Shechina. And that is that second type of kavana, which we'll call the awareness of being in God's presence. Venira. Now listen to these words. This is the most important words of Reb Chaim. Venira, de kavana zu eina midin kavana. This kavana, what? The awareness that you're standing before God is not a kavana. It's not the added thing you have to have in mind. Rak shu mi etzem maisa hatfila. That is the act of prayer. The act of prayer is the consciousness of an awareness of being in God's presence. That's not a kavana. That's the etzem maisa hatfila. Vim ein libei ponui. If your heart is not empty, vein erais atzma shem lefnei Hashem, you don't see yourself standing before God, umispalel, ein ze maisa tfila. It's not called the act of prayer. V'arayu kebechal misasek dein bedin maisa. You know what misasek is? In Hilchos Shabbos, you know what misasek is? Misasek, I never know how to translate it in English. Misasek is... what's it called?
Preoccupied.
When you do an act without any intention, you like move your, you move your, you walk into a room and you move your, you pick unconscious. Up, you know,
involuntary,
unconscious movement, right? So if you're saying the words without having that awareness before God, it's not even, it's like flicking a switch with your shoulder. You did nothing. Right? V'al kein ma'akevis kavanazu b'chol atfila. Therefore, the Rambam holds that this kavana, meaning this awareness of being before God's presence, you need that for all of davening. As if you didn't pray. You know, if you ever wonder, I have to tell you, if you ever stop to think, next time you're davening, stop to think for a second, if I'm not aware that I'm in God's presence,
you're speaking to yourself.
Your mom is speaking to yourself. And if it's one time it hits once in a while, it hits you like, oh my God, like what the heck am I doing? Your mama's talking to yourself.
That's not so terrible either if you have the understanding that talking to yourself is talking to God.
If you're aware that you're in his presence.
Yeah, I mean when one is right, if you're not unconscious, basically.
Right.
If you're standing and you're davening and you're saying the words and you have some understanding of what you're saying, and it's reverberate, you know, it's in your head. You may not be aware, you know, talking directly to God, but it is a conversation between you and yourself, and God is in us. And
so if you have God consciousness, self as within God, that's the ultimate mystical prayer. That's right. And by the way, you don't have to know what you're saying. That the way the Reb Chaim is explaining that even a person that doesn't know what the words are,
yeah,
that's still prayer.
as long right. So then you're saying he could just stand there and doesn't even really have to say anything.
It's the God awareness.
Well, that was the question we began with today. Then why do you even need to say the words? So that we dealt with last week. Mm-hmm. But the God awareness is prayer, mm-hmm. and that also means, by the way, you know that if you're aware of God's presence during the course of the day, you're praying. Mm-hmm. Heschel says it a million times. A person could, you know, you ever what Heschel said when he was marching with Martin Luther King? The famous quote? You ever saw it when Martin, you know, he was in Selma?
Yeah.
Those chazerim, they left it out of the movie. So right. Painful. But he was friends with Heschel, with Martin Luther King Jr. And after he marched in Selma, he said he felt he was praying with his feet. Because prayer is that act of being aware of being before God. And therefore, that doesn't have to be. That's what the Sfarim explain when the Gemara says Halavai shispalal adam kol yom kulo. Right? The Gemara says Halavai, a person should be praying all day. Gemara brachos Halavai shispalal adam kol yom kulo. Halavai, a person should be praying all day. What does that mean? Halavai, you should be saying words the whole day. No, that you have the guard awareness. That is prayer.
I mentioned this also once before. That's why we don't have to say berachos Torah all the time. That there's an inherent latent awareness.
That's what
right.
That's
same idea.
In the morning.
Yeah.
You don't have to say it.
That's right. Right.
That's what Bilvavi is. That's his whole. That's Bilvavi's entire thing is to get us to be aware and conscious of God all day.
Right. 100%. And the sources that Bilvavi gets it from, that's what they all say.
Ramchal.
All the Sfarim, all the Chassidish Sfarim, the Ramchal, it's an all, you know.
So that's the case of Kotir of. According to Rambam, why do you have to repeat the first bracha?
So he's about to say the other extraneous, the addendum,
so
knowing what the words mean, that's the first bracha.
But why? If you fulfill the essence of tefillah by God awareness, then that's it.
Because in the second addendum kavana, there are certain mitzvahs that you do need that addendum kavana also. Mm-hmm. For example, if you sit in a sukkah the first night of Sukkot, do you know what the Bach says? It's brought in, the Mishnah Berurah talks about also. According to if you in the first night of Sukkot you don't have a mind that non yakovid, you weren't yotze. Now that's definitely an addendum kavana. The mice is sitting in the sukkah, and yet there are poiskim that say la halacha. If you don't have a mind that addendum kavana that you're in zeich la non yakovid, the clouds of gory, you're not yotze. And what's the other example? What's another example of that? That the kavana. There's another example. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Shuvah and
Vidur. Huh? Shuvah and Vidur. Right. That's what the Rav brings in ala tshuva. Right. Exactly. That the charata. That the tshuva. The Vidur. If you don't have the kavana, again, the Vidur is saying the words of Vidur. Sham the begadnu. But if you don't have in mind that you regret it, that's that you didn't do the mitzvah at all. So there is such a thing as the addendum kavana that is also ma'akiv. So that would be the first bracha. By the way, what we were saying before that the essence of prayer is being before God. There's a vart that Chassidim say, it's a real Chassidish vart, that they would say that when the Misnagdim would all be upset. So, you know, the minig by Chassidim is to eat before davening. Right? Chassidim eat before davening, even though officially in Shulchan Aruch, you know.
I went to Gan Yisrael.
You went to Gan Yisrael, right? So there's an eat before davening. You know, Chassidim are very stringent when it comes to halacha, except when it comes to laws of tefillah. Because tefillah is all about. I'm saying the laws of tefillah because
I never heard about this one.
What? The
Chassidim? Eating.
You didn't know that? Sure, of course.
The best cake is Shabbos morning.
Zicher.
I didn't know.
It. Really?
Yeah.
You never. By all Chassidim, my grandmother said in Kiryat Helmets in Czechoslovakia, everyone ate before davening. The only time they didn't was Rosh Hashanah before Tkiyas.
Not Yom Kippur.
Yeah, Yom Kippur now. I'll say Yom Kippur. Even though I always say one cup of coffee Yom Kippur morning would make everything a lot better, but yeah, not Yom Kippur. But you should know the Zavart, they say that in Chabad at least, all Chassidim do it, but Chabad, they say that it comes from the Tzemach Tzedek, that the Tzemach Tzedek's daughter-in-law, Rebbetzin Rivka, was married to the Rebbe Marash. She was very sickly, she was weak, so the doctor said she has to eat first thing in the morning as soon as she wakes up. So she would get up and daven quickly and eat. And her father, Tzemach Tzedek, heard that, and Tzemach Tzedek said to her, it's better to eat in order to daven than daven in order to eat. And then the Rebbe Shab said that for me you have to do it besimcha, like your mamash, it's a school for simcha. The Rebbe Shab says you have to do it besimcha, like that it's not like a bidyeva, do it besimcha. And our Rebbe said that means that it's a school for simcha to eat before davening. And I can actually tell you there's a Jew in Miami, Rabbi Abrams, he's a mashpi in Miami. He was a Baal Tshuva, he was a Harley Davidson, big time Harley Davidson dude before he became from. And Vaisas, he did some big fleshika averis before he got frum. Like the real McCoy, you know, the zaftika averis, not like, you know, talking by Kaddish. And he went and he came to the Rebbe once and he asked for a tikkun. He came to the Rebbe and he asked for a tikkun for all these big averis that he did. And the Rebbe said to him that your tikkun is to make sure there's no one in yeshiva that doesn't eat before davening. Make sure you go around that there's no one that doesn't that have cake before davening, right? And that's his tikkun. Whatever, I don't know what it means, but whatever. Anyway, what the point I'm just saying is, so the Misnagdim would obviously get very upset. It's against halacha, right? You're not allowed to eat before davening. So the answer that Chassidim would say, which fits with what the Prim says, is that Chassidim don't eat before davening because when Chassidim eat, they're also davening. Right? If you eat in such a way of God awareness while you're eating, which is, of course, one of the Chidushim of Chassidus, Avoda Begashmi, serving God while you're eating, then you're not eating before davening. You're davening while you're eating. It's not two different things. Anyway, getting back to Reb Chaim, because I want to get to my question. So Reb Chaim is saying, the essential Maisa Tefillah is the awareness that you're sitting before God. If you don't have that, it's as if you skip the words. V'haloi vada, if anyone's still following in the Hebrew, we're 8 lines from the paragraph in the Hebrew. Line begins with the word dina kalei spal klal, yeah? Ukilu dolog mitzvah, if you skip those words. V'haloi vada, dele'inyan etzema tefillah, when it comes to the actual tefillah, kolei yutes brachas ma'akfim, you need all 19 brachas, right? So therefore what? So if you didn't have kavana in any bracha, you didn't have in mind you're sitting before God, by v'la malshinim, then it's, you didn't say that bracha. You need all 19. V'rak heicha shemachavanu makir ma'isav. Only when you have kavanah and you know what you're doing. V'yedei shumeid b'tfila. You know you're standing before God. Ela she'enu yedei perasha dvarim. You just don't know the addendum. You don't know what the words mean. Shezedin mesuyim rak b'tfila vad. That's the added element that prayer has, that you have to know what the words mean. Ha'isafas din kavanah. That's the added... The added kavana, the addendum kavana, bezehu da'iri sugi de brachas daf lamadal. That's what the Gemara means. The mespal tzoch shchavan li b'chal brachas v'meni yochal chavan es b'li b'klum yochavan b'achas mem. That's what the Gemara means. They only need by the first bracha. Yeah? Tov, if we could, let's just skip down to 7 lines from the bottom. Skip down for a second. V'zeu shepasek ken haRambam dada v'inen shiadu shoyim b'tfil makim b'chol tfil kul. That's what the Rambam paskin, that by all of tfil you have to know you're standing before God. V'haynu betray tami for 2 reasons. Chad mishum debalav achiyav mesasik. One is because if you don't have that, you're standing before God, you didn't do anything. It's like an involuntary act. V'ayin mishum dedin mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Right? Because the ma'isa, the Rambam holds, the mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Tavai makvi b'chol tfil, k'mo b'chol mitzvahs. Rak bekavanas perish advarm, just knowing what the words mean, dehu din mesuim rak betfila bezer de karmon doi mak rak bebracha rishayna de avis. That's what you only need by the first bracha of avis. So, let's what's the bottom line of Reb Chaim? So Reb Chaim's answering, how do you answer the contradiction between the first bracha of all of tefila? First bracha is the only one that you only need what the words mean. But all of the awareness before God, that you need the entire prayer. Right? Now, let's see what the Rav says. Let's look back into the Rav. And if anyone could answer this to me, I will be forever in their debt. If anyone could explain to me what the Rav is, what they're going to say. We're back in the footnote by the words of the fact, right? Okay. Says the Rav. Now again, he's quoting from Reb Chaim as we skip to the end. Why do you keep flipping pages? Where are you?
Because I thought you were on page 71, on the bottom of the footnote. That's where you were reading last time.
So right, so then I said that we looked over here to where we bring Reb Chaim, right? Now over here.
Okay.
Everyone has the footnote, what we're up to? Mm-hmm. Now, the Rav is going to bring Reb Chaim, but look how the Rav brings Reb Chaim. The fact that Kavana is indispensable only for the first benediction of the silent prayer does not contradict our premise. Because again, what's the Rav's premise? That the very essence of prayer
is
God awareness, exactly. Right? Yeah, so the fact that kavanah is only the fact that kavanah is indispensable only the first bracha doesn't contradict it. Why? The halacha simply took into consideration human weakness and inability to immerse in the covenantal awareness for a long time, and in sympathy with the worshipper who is incapable of sustaining continuous contemplative mood, related the initial kavanah to the entire tefillah. See Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. Is that what Reb Chaim says?
No. He's saying the opposite.
Yeah. Again, let's read it again. And he's quoting Reb Chaim. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
And he's quoting Reb Chaim. Again, look at the Rav. The fact that Kavanah is indispensable only for the first Baruch Shemoneh Esrei does not contradict our premise. Why? Because the Halacha simply took into consideration human weakness and inability to immerse in the covenantal awareness for a long time, And therefore, in sympathy with the worshipper who is incapable of sustaining continuous contemplative mood, related the initial kavana to the entire tefillah.
He's interpreting Rakhayim as saying what I said, which is that you only need, that you have to have God awareness only for the first bracha. That's what he's saying.
What's that?
He's saying that you only need to have the true God awareness, the true kavana, the pure kavana part, just for the first bracha, not for the whole thing, and that you have to know the words for the rest.
But what's
not
the
saying that part? He's
but what's
saying
so? What does the Rav mean? He says the human weakness. We can't immerse in the covenant of awareness for a long time.
Right. That we can't.
So in sympathy, the worshipper. So what did halacha do? Related the initial kavana to the entire tefillah.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
This is in line with the way I might have misinterpreted what I wrongly. You said I was incorrect, but maybe it is. He's saying that the kavana, the pure God recognition essence, is only required for the first.
Then what does he mean at the end of the sentence, related the initial kavana to the entire tefillah?
Because that first bracha is the engagement. It is, you know, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. That's where you meet. That's where you acknowledge that you're in firm the presence of Hashem. So
and we're not strong enough to do that.
So related the initial kavana to the entire tefillah, you're saying, means that you have the kavana in mind the first bracha. That works for the whole tefillah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because that's the main thing. Is
the encounter. But that's not what Reb Chaim says. Reb Chaim says, we just learned Reb Chaim inside, that you need to have the God awareness the entire tefillah. And if you don't have it, you're not Yotze.
But what's the contemplative mood? What does that mean?
So that's what I'm not...
It might mean that contemplative mood might mean the Perish HaMilah.
So I understood that he's saying, I also understood it like that, right?
Now, then it would make sense, because all he's saying is that the contemplative move is the additional thing of Perish HaMilim on this God awareness. Yeah.
So then what is it? So let's say you read the sentence like that the contemplative mood is what the words mean.
Right.
Then what are the next words? In sympathy with the worshipper who is incapable of sustaining continuous contemplative, related the initial kavana to the entire tefillah.
That's where my way looks, makes more sense.
Meaning related the initial kavana of the what the words mean?
No. There are two kavanas that he's talking about here, right? That's the whole.
But then how does the sentence flow? Because halacha takes sympathy with the worshipper who can't sustain a contemplative mood, which is saying means they didn't have Perish HaMilah. So because they took halacha, so then they related this God awareness to the entire tefillah? You just said you can't sustain that the entire prayer.
Okay, hold on for a minute. Sympathy.
I mamish don't know how to read.
The initial kavana is.
Yeah.
Is this idea of the God awareness.
God awareness.
Right, and that's related to the entire tefillah that you have to have.
So read the whole sentence.
So to make it easier, I don't have to have Perish HaMilim for the rest of tefillah except for that first bracha.
But look at the flow of the words. In sympathy with the worshipper, because we're in sympathy with the worshipper who can't sustain and continue to move, therefore, what did halacha do? Therefore, they related the initial kavana to the entire tefillah.
Yeah. If you want to read it that way, that means that if, as long as you can recognize God in that first bracha and really contemplate God,
no,
it's gotta be.
But that's not what Reb Chaim says.
That's not what this is saying.
I know, I agree with you.
I think he's saying the opposite. Sure. I think he's actually the contemplative is the additional aspect of Perish HaMilim on top of.
But you know that also doesn't make sense, because if you look in the sentence, it says human weakness and inability to immerse in the covenantal awareness for a long time. The covenantal awareness is the God awareness.
Yeah, but we can't do both. Basically, it's what it's saying. No. You can't do both. That's the weakness.
You can have a translated sitter in front
again,
of you.
Again, but it's hard to do both. So what's the most important thing? I have to be lifnei Hashem.
I don't know. I don't know how to read the words. That, covenantal awareness.
It is hard.
Halacha simply took into consideration human weakness and inability to immerse in the covenant. It's hard for a human being to stand in the covenantal awareness for a long time.
Right.
And therefore, you can't be sustaining the continuous mood, which I think means the God awareness, but you're saying means the meaning of the words.
What's contemplative mood?
There's God awareness.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely.
It can't be understanding meaning of the words.
You could have a translated sitter. You could have a sitter there that gives you the meaning.
I think so, but then it doesn't make sense with the.
When you're contemplative, adding on an additional aspect.
I don't think so.
The simplest thing is I'm standing in front of God. Contemplative is I have to add on an additional thing. I'm going to talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if you say it like that, like the sentence also doesn't make sense.
It doesn't work well, but at least it ties in with Reb Chaim a little better.
In other words, either the sentence you read it according to what it says and it goes against Reb Chaim, which the Rav is quoting, or you read it like Jonathan's reading it, and then b'chal the sentence structure doesn't make sense.
I don't know.
For years, I couldn't understand how to read this.
The problem here you're stating,
yeah,
is that he seems to be quoting Reb Chaim.
Wrong.
No. That he seems to be right. But the problem is that you think he's quoting Rav Chaim.
He said, Vida Brachas and Kiddush Rav Chaim.
He's saying...
Just go look there.
Just go look at Rav Chaim to understand the basis of what I'm saying. I don't agree with Rav Chaim.
If you want to say like that, fine. It's just hard for me to understand that.
So he's quoting someone who he disagrees with?
Yes.
When you're reading the initial Kabbalah.
Oh, come on. That's
no way.
Yes.
That's
he's not that's quoting him.
That's a push.
He's referencing Reb Chaim.
For a guy who I disagree with, see here.
On Griska Torah and Tefillah, it would be a hard thing to imagine.
So I'll tell you something. What's interesting in the Erevin?
The initial Kavanah, when you read the words initial Kavanah.
Yeah.
The initial Kavanah could be not the initial Kavanah used in the first bracha.
Right, that's exactly. It's Lifnei Hashem. That's the...
What?
It's not being used as... Right, that it's the initial Kavanah to the entire...
What's the initial Kavanah?
Right, it's not...
I just don't know how you read an initial Kavanah.
I don't know how to read it either. You tell me. How do you read the initial Kavanah? What the words mean?
No, I think that's
God awareness?
God awareness. Right.
So you only have to have God awareness in the first bracha?
No, Kavanah to the entire tefillah.
What do you mean? So halacha related it? You only have to have it by the first bracha, and then halacha relates it to the whole tefillah? That's not like Reb Chaim.
Where does it say?
No,
you have to have the initial Kavanah, which is the whole, which is the contemplative.
Right.
So you have to have that by the whole tefillah.
Right, and the additional words.
So now let's read the sentence.
Okay.
So the fact that Kavanah is indispensable only for the first bracha does not contradict. Why? The halacha simply took into consideration human weakness and inability to immerse in the covenantal awareness, meaning God awareness, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And in sympathy with this worshiper who can't have the covenant awareness for a long time, because he's incapable of sustaining continuous contemplative mood, related the initial Kavanah to the entire tefillah.
What does that mean?
Right, as long as the initial Kavanah, which is the God awareness, is there, then...
Is there when?
In the beginning.
By the first bracha.
Then it carries through.
But that's not what Reb Chaim says. I agree with you that's what the words are saying, 100%. I agree with you if you read the words, he's saying like this. Halacha takes into sympathy that a person can't have God awareness the whole time, so you have it by the first bracha, and then halacha says that'll work for the whole prayer. Beautiful. I agree with you. That's not what Reb Chaim says.
So show the Reb Chaim business, because I was thinking along your lines also. I guess the two possibilities: we either don't understand the Rav or don't understand the Reb Chaim.
I'm with you. I agree with you. Either we're not understanding the Rav, we're not understanding the Chaim. It's hard to say the Rav is contradicting Reb Chaim.
Unless
you want to say like Jay. The Gemara that the Reb Chaim brings, the Gemara says.
No, that the Rav brings.
Yeah. It's the Reb Chaim brings it also. The Rav brings it. Yeah, it's the Gemara that says. You see on the Reb Chaim page, it's over here.
Right.
See the line begins with the word Lamedalid?
Yeah.
That's the source that you only have to have Kavanah by the first bracha. That's what Brachas Lamedalid says.
Which is what this is saying.
So Reb Chaim says Milim. Right?
The initial Kavanah must be with Nehashem. That's it.
So what does it mean that Halacha related it to the entire Tefillah?
That's where you have to have Lifnei Hashem.
By only the first bracha?
No. I only require you to have Peirush HaMilim for the first bracha.
Because the guy can't juggle both.
Okay.
But the initial Kavanah of Lifnei Hashem is for the whole tefillah.
But then look at the beginning of the Rav sentence. No. The halacha took into consideration human weakness and inability.
You read the whole thing straight through, right? So you go back a little bit and he's saying the whole thing is about Lifnei Hashem. What's this whole thing about?
But he says that human weakness cannot immerse the covenantal awareness for a long time.
And therefore I can't burden him with Peirush HaMilim.
But it doesn't say that.
It
doesn't. It doesn't say that. Anyway,
the initial kavana has got to mean perishamila.
And in sympathy, the worshiper was incapable of standing.
Because the initial kavana relates to the beginning of the footnote.
I agree with you. That's what the Rav is saying. But that's not what Rav Chaim says. He says if you don't, if you, we read it inside, if you don't have, if you're not aware of God, even one of the 90 brachos, you're not yotze. He says,
lifting Hashem is the, is everything.
You want to read again the Reb Chaim?
That part, yeah.
Well,
he says at the bottom,
no? No, veneer, he said near the, right? It's as if you skip these words. You need all 19 brachas.
He says either
Rav Chaim,
Rav Barak, Rav
Barak,
Rav Barak, Rav Barak, Rav Barak, Rav Barak,
right. Right, but the God awareness, you need all of them.
Is that too much for a guy to handle more than that?
You see, but the,
again,
as opposed to
if you read
kavana,
the,
which he needs,
no, the initial kavana, if it, I think we're looking too deeply into the words. When the Rav says initial kavana, which brings you back to your question, but initial kavana is the initial kavana that he quoted
which
in the footnote,
Hashem, correct?
No,
no,
which is perish hamilim.
So what does it
the
mean?
The popular biblical term tefillah and the esoteric. And he goes on
it's not
to say, is perish hamilim.
The biblical, he began the footnote by saying the biblical term tefillah is not perish hamilim.
Right.
The whole footnote was that the biblical term tefillah is directing your whole self to God.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that, with you.
That's what the whole footnote was about.
Yeah.
The whole
footnote,
the whole footnote is Reb Chaim. That's what I don't understand. The whole text is Reb Chaim. The whole footnote is Reb Chaim. And then he quotes not like Reb Chaim. I'm telling you, ask all your YU friends, please tell me what shot is in this footnote.
I don't know why you guys learn this.
Anyway, I just want to finish by saying that the Rebbe says, because somebody once wrote that took this a literally halacha, the Rebbe says Reb Chaim doesn't mean halacha lamaisa. And I'm sure the Rebbe will say, you have to, the Bava Rebbe says Reb Chaim doesn't mean halacha lamaisa, and as was brought already, we already said it earlier, I was going to say it at the end. Halacha lamaisa, we paskin that even if a person has no kavan at all, you are yotze, we're shvach, we can't do much better. But we have to know that that's what the Rav is saying. The Rav does say that. The Rav says that because we're weak, so you only have to have the God awareness by the first bracha. So that's exactly what the Rav says. The problem is the Reb Chaim doesn't say that. So, please find Adrab. Please show me what my mistake is. So far, nobody's managed to convince me that I'm reading it wrong.
You were.